The Big Picture, a Christian insight into the world of movies, television and pop culture with magazine editor Ben McKechin and scriptwriter Mark Hadley. A Bible Society Australia production, sharing the light of God's Word into every corner of your world.
Giant glad tidings to you. I'm Ben McKechin.
And I'm his BFG, Mark Hadley. Welcome to episode 67 of The Big Picture for the week beginning July 10. Roald Dahl and Steven Spielberg are uniting for the BFG. Could this be family film heaven?
Oscar winners and nominees star in Maggie's Plan, Mark, but should you choose to see this, make-up morality should go along fast.
And is the latest film starring Harry Potter star Daniel Radcliffe the weirdest movie of 2016? Find out.
We are going to find out because we're going to talk about Swiss Army Man, this weird, weird movie, Mark, that Daniel Radcliffe is in. But that's coming up later in the show. Before we get to that, before we get to a lot of other things, this week at cinemas, I know you would know this, Mark. I'm sure you were just waiting for this to happen. This Thursday,
Colour
July 14th,
me anticipated.
The Legend of Tarzan.
Yes, I am. I have been buffing up.
Oh, you
up
are. You're the one.
I'll be turning up in a loincloth.
Can't say I was looking forward to this particularly. Harry Potter director, speaking of Harry Potter things, Harry Potter director David Yates came off the back of that massive Harry Potter franchise and was asked, you know, what do you want to do next? And he said Tarzan. So he's directed The Legend of Tarzan, which stars Alexander Skarsgård, Australia's Margot Robbie, Samuel L. Jackson are in it as well. We're going to talk about it later. We're going to talk about it next week, but also coming up on the show to get us ready for that, Mark, we are going to have 3 minutes on everything you need to know about Tarzan. That's also coming up in this edition of The Big Picture.
With a stopwatch. Okay, and this week on the ABC, we have episode one of New Blood. Now, bear with me, people. This is a fast-paced contemporary crime drama about two young investigators who take on the establishment in a fight for justice. Does that sound overly familiar? Well, it does. But it comes from multi-award winning author and screenwriter Anthony Horowitz, who's best known for his TV series such as Agatha Christie's Poirot, Midsummer Murders, and the critically acclaimed Foyle's War. So this new series promises a lot, and not just action, intrigue, and apparently a fresh take on the crime genre.
Mark, also coming to cinemas this Thursday, which I think I'm looking forward to this more than you are, the all-female remake, reboot, reimagining, rehashing, whatever you want to call it, of the 80s comedy classic Ghostbusters. That's right. Instead of dudes, there are now chicks who are busting ghosts. Who are we going to call? We're going to find out because we're actually going to review it next week on the show. Ghostbusters at cinemas this Thursday.
Okay, well, something we haven't spoken much about is The Briefcase on Channel 9. Now, this is a reality...
What's The Briefcase?
Well, this is an interesting thing you should probably have your eyes open for. It's a reality TV show based on the American series of the same name, which debuted on Channel 9 on June 20, so just a little while away. And each episode introduces us to two Australian families who are struggling financially, okay? Picture that. Just as they're given a suitcase with $100,000 each.
Whoa.
Here's the catch. They've got to decide either to keep it all for themselves or give some or all of it away to the other family who's struggling.
Oh.
Okay, yes. And they're unaware that their counterparts are also faced with the same dilemma. There's 6 episodes in the series. It is...
Have you seen any of this?
This is appalling. Okay, it is about... Now, one commentator has described this as exploitative poverty porn at its worst.
Whoa.
And I would probably say he doesn't go far enough. I just want to say to the producers in the States who came up with this idea, really? We're selling out humanity now?
Wow, okay. That sounds like definitely one
Channel
to...
9, The Briefcase. You can catch it and be outraged with me.
Yeah, that's one to avoid. In entertainment news, the Lego movie was a massive smash a couple of years ago. And so as you'd expect, more Lego movies were going to show up. So we're going to get Lego Batman movie. That's coming our way. And Lego Movie 2 is also coming. And Billion Brick Race is also in production. But so is Mark. And I think the young lads in your household are going to be excited about this. The Lego Ninjago movie, which I think you know far more about than I do. But the Lego Ninjago movie, so what that basically is, for anyone who doesn't know, is ninjas in Lego. That film is coming September 22nd, 2017. So, youngsters, pencil that into your... Do people still have diaries now? Do kids still have diaries?
No, I'm afraid all my boys have iPhones.
Put that into your electronic device. September 22, 2017, the Lego Ninjago movie is coming.
I will take your Lego Ninjago film and I will raise you Minecraft.
Oh!
Okay, tweensters, look out for this. It's blowing up on the big screen May 25th, 2019.
Go!
We're that far ahead.
Why, you gazumped me.
Well, Warner Brothers has set a release date for the video game adaptation, which will be presenting the kind of classic 3D film on IMAX. Sorry, the 3D game on IMAX. So this is a massive thing for kids who follow this. Minecraft, though, will be going head-to-head against two massive film releases in the same month. Okay, they'll be going ahead Star Wars Episode 9 and Marvel's Avengers Infinity War Part 2. Will Minecraft be enough to take on Star Wars and Marvel's Avengers? Probably, say I. This is something that's going to be incredible. I mean, it's, let's face it, it's nothing new, though. Angry Birds was the most recent mobile game to get to the movies. But Candy Crush is also coming, along with Fruit Ninja, a game myself I haven't played.
I'm hanging out more for Ninjago than Fruit Ninja.
Okay, well, listen, we're about that part of the show. We like to kick off with a little bit of a funnier sooner with true or false. Now, as we said earlier, the remake of Ghostbusters is coming out. If you're ready for a ghostly game of true or false, then, well, here we go. True or false, Ben, a Tokyo hamburger chain has unveiled the Ghostbuster burger just in time for the new movie's release. The burger features black buns, meat patties, purple cabbage drenched in black olive and anchovy paste. That much I give you is true.
I really wanted that to be true.
What is the side order? Is it the side order slimy tofu molded to look like fresh brains? True or false?
Mate, I again hope that is really true. I take it you're gonna like leave us stewing on that to think that's true. You'll come back to give
us
the actual answer.
Stomach gurgling stewing on that. Okay. Well, look, let's get on to our first now showing for the week. Do you love movies about smart, cultured people in New York City and how they always seem to have trouble with relationships? And then your ears are about to prick up, I'm sure, because in the footsteps of almost every movie Woody Allen has ever made, Maggie's Plan is arrived, starring Greta Gerwig, Ethan Hawke and Julianne Moore. It's a smart, cultured people in relationship muddles. Just the sort of thing you'd expect to happen in those downtown streets of New York. Well, while Maggie's Plan aims to be a farce about modern morality, Ben came away kind of annoyed and saddened. I'm looking across the room now. I can see how annoyed and saddened he is. By the suggestion for how to treat yourself and others, it suggests.
You know, I'm curious about you.
What aspect of me?
Every aspect of you.
What does his wife think about that?
She doesn't know about it. I think their marriage like fell apart and now he's trapped in it.
I don't want to be married to Georgette anymore. I'm in love with you.
Do you want to hear your horoscope?
No.
He's totally self-absorbed.
I'm terrified that I'm falling out of love with him.
It's too bad you can't give him back to his ex-wife, right?
Mark, that clip somewhat goes towards describing the kind of relationship jumble that's going on in Maggie's Plan. In the opening sequence of this, Maggie, who's played by Greta Gerwig, she announces that she wants a baby but doesn't actually need a father to stick around or be around. So she's looking to be artificially inseminated. And I think at that point when she says, I just don't see why I should wait to have a baby and make other decisions in her life, that pretty much goes on to shape a lot of the events that happen in Maggie's Plan. Along the way, she meets John, who's played by Ethan Hawke. He's an Oscar nominee. Oscar winner Julianne Moore turns up as Georgette, John's wife. John is this lecturer, the poet, lecturer guy who's not doing so well. His wife is on the rise. He's a serious academic who's very well celebrated. Their marriage isn't going so well. And then across the course of Maggie's Plan, somehow all of their lives come together in ways that, as you said before, I found extremely frustrating and quite saddening.
Do they all end up in a restaurant together?
At various times, they do different combinations of they do end up in restaurants.
Honestly, doesn't this just sound like a Woody Allen film?
Mate, it does. It just doesn't have the same, depending on how you feel about Woody Allen. I have liked Woody Allen a lot. And then the last couple of years, I've kind of thought more about some of the messages he puts forwards and the relationships he presents and just his attitudes towards so many things in life, which I've come to, I disagree with. So I find it difficult to like his films as much as I used to. Maggie's Plan really wants to be a Woody Allen film, particularly those really good ones from the 70s and the 80s that dug so deeply into, particularly the as much as people are smart and cultured and seem to have it all together, they're really quite broken inside when it comes to knowing how to live in relationship with other people. Maggie's Plan really wants to do this well. I don't think it does because it doesn't have the same, everything from the same sense of humor. It doesn't, there's wit and banter in this film, but it doesn't zing and doesn't quite hit home as strongly as Woody Allen had. But I thought the main issue I had with the film was there's so little explanation or character development that's done in Maggie's plan that even though I disagree with what people are doing up on screen, especially when it came to the way that the boundaries and the vows and the promises you make in marriage, the way they just seem to evaporate across the film like willy-nilly.
Wow.
Even though I disagree with that on a personal level, I can still watch a story where people are doing that and can go along with it as far as if you're giving me something to go along with. And for me, Maggie's plan just felt empty of that. It seems to want to be a farce about morality, so it's deliberately absurd in what it's doing. But it's an increase in absurdity. I just thought it wasn't terribly funny or terribly credible as it went along. And as such, I just came out kind of annoyed.
Gosh, did you see anything you liked in it?
I like Greta Gerwig. A lot of people I don't think would know her, but you probably know her face. She turns up in a lot of movies like this. She's kind of the go-to girl when it comes to New York quirky, kooky, hipster girl who has got some smarts, but she's a little bit all over the place. That's what Greta Gerwig does, and she does it very well. Ethan Hawke and Julianne Moore are great. Julianne Moore particularly, she's probably the funniest thing in the show. She seems to revel in being this cold, ice-cold Scandinavian academic who kind of tries to milk that as much as she can of just being this smug, arrogant, successful academic. But then beyond that, and some co-stars Bill Hader, Maya Rudolph, and Warcraft's Travis Fimmel, beyond the cast members in this and them giving you something to watch and look at, no, there's not too much I could recommend.
So what's driving their characters? I mean, do they have some form of overarching morality, even if it's as simple as, make yourself happy? Or what is
That's pretty much it. So what seems to be driving it overall and what seems to be going through Maggie's plan in terms of what people are making their decisions on, especially when it comes to morality, is just choose your own adventure. Just make it up as you go along, depending on the situation, the circumstance, and how you feel. So I think as a result, Maggie's plan actually is quite a snapshot of the world that we live in today. I think plenty of people think that morality is relative from situation to situation, that depending on where you are, who you're speaking with, you would change the way you operate and act and think. And that's fine because you can do that because different situations are different. One of the things I find most appealing about Christianity, even though it's difficult to do, is that there's a consistency to the moral framework and the outlook upon life. Now, I am saying it's difficult to achieve it, and there are a lot of things that I find so hard to live up to in all areas of my life, from marriage to the way I treat my family to the work that I choose, all those kind of things. But what I like about it is the consistency, and then I can know in any particular situation, I can call upon a framework that doesn't shift and doesn't change. And what Maggie's plan does demonstrate, as much as Maggie does play to plan and control things, is you can't. And also the way people implode and relationships crumble around the fact of when you shift the goalposts all the time, you don't know for certain what people are going to do, you can't trust. All that comes up in Maggie's plan. But for me, it just blew up in the face of the film. I didn't walk out kind of being really challenged by it.
Wow, talk about frustrating. Mm. Okay, well, listen, Maggie's plan stars Greta Gerwig, Ethan Hawke, and Julianne Moore. So it's there if you want it. It opened at select cinemas last Thursday and is rated M for coarse language, mature themes, and brief nudity.
But Mark, now I really need to know the answer to that, true or false. What was that side order that you mentioned?
So a Tokyo hamburger chain has unveiled the Ghostbuster burger, designed to look basically like a piece of rotting graveyard trash. And it includes a side order. Mm. Now, this side order is slimy tofu molded to look like fresh brains.
Please, yes.
Well,
true.
Actually, false.
Oh, come on.
Neither is it deep fried grasshoppers in sweet soy sauce, which I was hoping for. But actually, it is a marshmallow mad burger, a dessert made of marshmallows, Oreos, and red sauce to mimic the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. So you get your own little marshmallow man with your burger.
Yeah. On that like delicious that? Note, Mark.
Couldn't you be? It's a recipe for illness.
On that delicious note, Mark, after the break, you are going to be talking about whether Roald Dahl and Steven Spielberg and the BFG movie is the instant family classic that many people are hoping it will be. Welcome back to The Big Picture. Now, coming up in a moment is one of the biggest children's books to make it to the movies. Literally, it's Roald Dahl's Big Friendly Giant, better known as the BFG. Stay tuned for Mark's review coming very soon. But before we get there, we thought we'd chat to another expert in children's entertainment. Lindy Jenkinson is a former Annandale bookshop owner in Sydney who now works for the children's bookshop in Beecroft, the oldest specialist children's bookshop in New South Wales. So yes, she is officially an expert. For press record this week, Mark dropped by her personal book nook to ask what she thinks of Hollywood's attempts to capture the essence of classic authors such as Roald Dahl.
Well, I'm sitting here with Lindy, and Lindy, books aren't just a passing fancy like me. I mean, I love books, but for you, they're a lifetime devotion.
That's true, Mark. I mean, I've loved books since I was a little girl and went into accounting as a profession for my sins, never actually wanting to be an accountant, but it was something I couldn't think of anything else to do, frankly, at university, but always had the idea in the back of my head that I wanted to run my own business one day. And so in my early 20s, decided that it was going to be a bookstore with a cafe, which at the time was unique. By the time I got around to actually doing it, it wasn't unique anymore. But still, it was great. So for 6 years, myself and a friend owned and ran a bookshop in Annandale in Sydney, which was fantastic. Really great experience. And we had a fairly significant children's section.
You still work in children's books now, you know, for another children's store.
I do. I've had the privilege of working with the children's bookshop in Beecroft, which is, I think, probably Sydney's best children's bookshop, if not more widely in Australia. It's fantastic. They first opened in 1971, different owner now, but really passionate about children's books, and it's just it's a privilege to work there.
Well, speaking of passionate children's books, the BFG being released as a film, and yet we've also got the book to lean back on. You've been rereading it, I take it. How do you find it as a book, and why do you think it stands up so well?
Look, I think, yeah, the BFG's awesome, and all of Roald Dahl's books are hugely popular. I think there's something about the way that Roald Dahl can get into the mind of a child. I think his sense of humour, and he says this about himself, or he did say this before his death, but that he has the same sense of humour as kids. And I think he had his own children, he would tell them stories at bedtime, and obviously with characters, you know, the more exaggerated they are, the more fun they are for kids. And a lot of the characters that we read about in his books were first heard around their bedsides at night. But yeah, look, he's brilliant. The BFG is a great story. It's got, yeah, really scary bits to it. I think that's something about what kids love about the way he writes, is that his villains are scary. He doesn't necessarily tell all of the stuff that's happening, so he leaves it up to the imagination of the child, which I think is really important, so that when you read a book, or when a kid reads one of his books, you can read it at different ages and get something different out of it. So yeah, I reread the BFG this week.
Because you're a big kid.
Yeah. And gee, it's great. And it's so lovely to read something like that and think, you know what, it is great. And it wasn't just that I was a child and enjoyed the story.
Now, I'm thinking about children today and their entertainments. And we do live in a slightly different age, you know, when Roald first started writing. Computer games seem to dominate screen time, I guess you'd call it. Doesn't matter if it's an iPad or a computer or a television or something. It seems to be a huge factor. Yet reading is something we still want to encourage and is still vastly popular. You used to run Roald Dahl Days at the bookshop that you ran. Did that have a good turnout?
Look, yeah, I mean, that wasn't our idea. That's something that they exist worldwide. This year is the 100th anniversary, obviously, of Roald Dahl's birth, so there's going to be a huge Roald Dahl Day globally on the 13th of September, so you should check out your local bookstore. But he appeals, and I think part of that probably comes back to the idea that when you're reading a book, you're in your imagination, which is different. When you put it on a screen, it's somebody else's imagination that you're watching, and that can be incredible, and oftentimes it matches the imagination that you've come up with as a child or as an adult reading a book. But sometimes it doesn't match your imagination, and that can be where people are disappointed or feel that it isn't the story that they thought it was. But I think that's what's really special about reading, is that when you read something that's really well crafted and it's not all spelled out for you, that you can take it wherever you want to take it and it becomes your own story.
Now, you're a mother of a darling little five-year-old daughter. Have we started with any Roald Dahl yet in your house?
We haven't yet, but it's interesting. I was thinking about whether or not it was time, and having since reread the BFG, it's perfect. It's fine. And I think we'll probably start with that one.
Do you see anything you really like to take from Roald Dahl's work that you think is particularly helpful as a Christian parent?
I think his stories particularly, there are always baddies in the story, and they're always fairly nasty. I mean, you think of The Witches as a classic example. I remember loving that film as a younger person, but being terrified by them. They're always really nasty pieces of work, but they always get their comeuppance in the end. And I think there's something about that idea. Kids love it. Kids love to see that, you know, the good kid, the smart kid, the kid that's smarter than their parents generally in the stories, or has got more decency than the adults around them. Generally that's the case, I think, with these stories. But what's nice about them too is that it's not too sweet. You know, there is that sense of playfulness and mischievousness.
Mark, it's that time of our show where we get to what your kids are watching. And of course, what your kids are watching this week is the BFG, a creation of cinematic royalty, and rightly one of the most anticipated children's films of the year. So it's no surprise it is our choice for what your kids are watching. I think it's official, Mark. There's no surprise. What your kids are watching this week is the BFG.
It has to be.
Officially, that's what they're watching. Based on the beloved book by Roald Dahl and directed by Steven Spielberg and bankrolled by companies like Walt Disney and Walden Media, it certainly had people in the biz buzzing for the better part of a year. But does the BFG live up to the hype? And more importantly for Christian parents, Walden Media, this production company, the people who brought us the Narnia Chronicles, they're a Christian-owned company that's dedicated to films that are, quote, life-affirming and carry a moral message, end quote. So, can the BFG teach kids anything helpful about God?
You can call me the big, friendly giant.
Oh, my.
I catch dreams. This one sounds like you.
There are bad dreams here too.
Yeah.
Run.
Sophie, hide.
You has a delicious little bean.
All right, Mark, let's start from the start. How true to the book is this BFG? Does Spielberg go stomping off into other directions, into another plot, or is he staying true to the book?
He's staying true.
And good look, on you, Spielberg.
Relief there for all the fans out there. I basically spent the week before reading up on the BFG, sounding out some of the more difficult words. Look, it's got some of its... it's got
That's
a
why
crane.
I didn't read it.
Well, for those who know the story, you know that Roald Dahl actually invents a sort of whole sort of special language for the BFG, the way he speaks about things which are scrum diddly-umptious and all that sort of stuff. He is a fantastic story in himself, and basically Spielberg stays true. Sophie, this little orphan girl who's reading one night during the witching hour at 3 a.m., hears strange sounds, sticks her nose out between the curtains even though she knows she shouldn't, sees a dark shape, and this dark shape carries her off to Giant Land. There she's thinking, I'm going to be eaten, but no, she's actually introduced to the BFG. You think that because I'm a giant, I'm a man-goblin cannibal? Laughs a keeper, and that's when we meet Mark Rylance as a sort of Weta Digital's recreated BFG.
Mark Rylance, the actor who won the Academy Award last year, Best Supporting Actor for Bridge of Spies. And you mean Weta Digital Enhanced, as in he acted the whole role out in like a soundstage.
That's right.
Yeah, he's animated over the top effectively.
Absolutely. It's kind of right. the new way to do animation is to actually set actors free in little dotted suits so they can actually do the animations and the animators map their movement.
We should try that in the big picture one week. Wear the dotted suits and then we animate later. It'd be hilarious.
I think I would be about as animated as normal.
So what's it like, especially for kids and particularly for those who haven't read the book, this version of the BFG that Steven Spielberg's done?
Oh, look, it is great. I took three boys along to this, our three boys. They'd never read the book before. We'd read other Roald Dahl stuff, but they were Roald Dahl fans. They kind of like Fantastic Mr. Fox and all these sorts of other books. But they hadn't read this particular one, the BFG. And so they sat down to watch it and they just had a great time. They were rolling at points, you know, in fact, so much so that I had to pick them up and put them back on the chairs. Though one of them was trying to escape. Look, another story. But that said, they had a great time. Roald Dahl fans are going to just be enjoying the usual irreverent humor. Look, Spielberg does dig a little bit into the backstory of the BFG, which obviously Roald Dahl doesn't. It's quite a short book, and so he's got a two-hour film to work with. But none of it is unanticipated. None of it is out of place. It's all the same sort of laughing stuff. And Frobscottle, you'll be happy to know, is in the film.
Thank you. Frobscottle.
I know I'm talking to some of the fans are going, what would they actually do that? Frobscottle's this drink where the bubbles go down, and it makes people sort of, you know, have gaseous moments.
Ooh, okay. And hilarity ensues for anyone under 10 and Mark.
Yes, farting corgis. Basically, they're just... And a queen.
The movie that features them.
And a queen that has her own sort of issues in that particular area. Fantastic, rolling fun.
I've heard from some reviewers, or read some reviews, that the middle section of the film lags a little bit. It's mainly focused on Sophie and the BFG. But is that true? Is that what you found?
Yeah, I actually read those reviews too and was actually thinking to myself, oh, okay, I'll prepare myself for a little bit of a downside because I like the BFG as a book. And look, I don't think it drags as much. I thought the expectations maybe were a little too high. And look, it's fine. There's some emotional moments where you learn a bit more. And I think that's actually really quite good for the older kids. There's a few older kids in the audience who might pick it up who are great fans, and they'll see that there's more depth to the character. Anyway, the bit in the middle, which is kind of a bit of story, less laughs, a bit of story, just makes you feel more for the BFG.
Mark, you're a massive advocate. You've talked about this on the show before, of talking to your kids about films on the way home. So were there any big conversations going on in the Hadley Truckster on the way back?
Absolutely. I want to say that there were two great conversations, and I want to pass these on just in case you're a parent and you're heading home. You can try either of these. The first one is one of the key elements of the plot. This will be no surprise if people have read the book, is a nightmare, which the BFG captures dreams, okay, and he stores them in bottles. And the BFG captures a nightmare. It becomes integral to sort of getting rid of all the bad giants. But this nightmare, he's asked to describe it. What is this nightmare? And he says, this nightmare is remembering everything you've done and there is no forgiveness. I know. And
that does sound terrible.
Like, it was the most terrifying thing that could possibly be conceived, the idea that someone would one day remind you of everything you'd ever done and there would be no forgiveness. Now, I got to talk to my boys about that on the way home. Honestly, that was such a safe pass to talking about the end of the world. You know, that one day we're all going to be standing in that situation where somebody is going to remind us of everything we've ever done, and it will be terrifying if there is no forgiveness. So it was great to talk to the boys about that and say, look, you know, we've just had that illustration of how scary it could be, and yet we know that we don't have to be scared if there's somebody standing there on our side, you know, like God promises to do.
Mm. And the other conversation you had?
Oh, look, at the end of the film, and I'm not giving anything away plot-wise, but there's this interesting moment where in which Sophie says, I'm not as lonely as I was before because I can talk to the BFG and know he hears me. Mm. Now, it's this wonderful point because the BFG, as everybody knows, has these huge flappy ears, right? He can hear everything anywhere. He can hear the thoughts in your heart. And talking to our boys about it was a great film moment. You could have this creature who could hear your thoughts and hear your heart and hear the way you're thinking. But we could go one better. Do you know that God is like the BFG in that he can hear even your innermost thoughts and what you might be saying to him every morning so you don't have to be lonely? But the difference between him and the BFG is that God is always there. The BFG may be somewhere else on the planet.
The BFG is big fun and a good time for the family, according to Mark, and some of the little human beings who have been heading off to cinemas this week for a scrumdiddlyumptious time since it opened on Thursday. It's rated PG because some scenes might scare young children, probably when you see royalty breaking wind, and it stars Mark Rylance, Rebecca Hall, Penelope Wilton, Bill Hader, and Jermaine Clement.
And speaking of all things BFG, check out the July edition of Eternity Newspaper, great supporters of The Big Picture, because I actually have my review of the BFG in that. You get some more information there or go onto their website, same sort of things. And also Ben's review of Maggie's Plan. We're a little early in the show, we were talking about Maggie's Plan. You'll be able to hear him talk more about the sorts of things that you should be considering when you look at that sort of film.
And other stuff from us at The Big Picture, you go to thebigpicturewebsite.com, thebigpicturewebsite.com. You'll find other articles, past editions of the show, videos, all that kind of stuff to help you think through movies and TV from a Christian perspective. Still to come on this show, though, Mark, we're going to talk about one of the weirdest movies I've seen for a long time, and it stars Harry Potter himself, Daniel Radcliffe. Welcome back to The Big Picture. We've hit the soundtrack part of our show, Mark. And before I do our next now showing review on Swiss Army Man, which I can confirm for you, Mark, is one of the weirdest movies around, okay, we picked something from a soundtrack of another really weird movie. And we'll talk about it after we play this.
Don't ask me what you know is true. Don't have to tell you I love your precious heart. I was standing, you were there. Two worlds collided and they never tear us apart. We could live for a thousand years, but if I hurt you, I make one. We could fly, 'cause we all have wings, but some of us don't.
Mark, that of course was the sounds of Australia's own In Excess with Never Tear Us Apart, taken from the Donnie Darko soundtrack. You've seen Donnie Darko, haven't you?
Donnie Darko, it's an epic film.
Oh, so good. It's now being re-released this week on DVD and Blu-ray. It's 15-year anniversary of this cult classic. If you haven't seen it, it's weird but great. I didn't really like the director's cut as much, which is where In Excess's song came from. So the original film had a great soundtrack loaded up with all these 80s hits. It's set in the 80s, and they had a variety of excellent songs on there. And then for the director's cut, the writer-director Richard Kelly decided to change a few songs out. I think there may have been some copyright issues going on, but also I think he just made some choices that he just wanted to do some things differently, including the opening sequence, which is really quite memorable, just of Donnie riding down a hill in the dawn on his bike. It's an excellent start to a movie. It originally had Echo and the Bunnymans' The Killing Moon, but it was replaced by Never Tear Us Apart. And I don't quite understand, because a lot of the music was so well-fitting, including this excellent tracking shot that goes through the high school in the middle of the film that's got Tears for Fears Head Over Heels behind it, which I think is one of the best like tracking shot introductions of character scenes you can get in movies. That's Donnie Darko.
The weird thing about the director's cut too is I think he tried to explain too much. Like one of the best things about the Donnie Darko film, people, if you haven't seen this, is it's kind of one of those perplexing how, why films.
What on earth is going on? It may be about time travel. It may be about a young guy who's lost his mind. It may be about young love. It may be about self-sacrifice. It may be about Patrick Swayze, and it may be about fear and love. Who knows? But then the director's cut actually explains more. So that's all been re-released this week, but it sounds like both of us are recommending go and check out the original.
Is the weirdest movie you have seen? I mean, Return of the Killer Tomatoes? The Toxic Avenger?
Donnie Darko's up there.
Please. Chances are it might not be anywhere near as weird as Swiss Army Man, which stars Daniel Radcliffe. Yes, Harry Potter himself as a corpse who rescues a guy from a desert island. And that's only where it starts getting weird.
Mm.
Out this week, Swiss Army Man is straight up strangeness, but its making of a straightforward statement about loneliness and purpose in life is well worth the effort.
I need you to help me get home. Okay, buddy?
Okay, buddy.
You're a miracle. Or I'm just hallucinating from starvation.
You're special.
Daniel Radcliffe. As a corpse.
Yes, okay. Correct.
Just how weird is Swiss Army Man?
Mate, it is weird. And one of the enjoyable things about Swiss Army Man is it's deliberately weird. So it's not just weird where it feels like a movie that's been put together wrong and confusing and I don't know what's going on here. The two guys behind this is a film by Daniels, as in Daniel plural, because there's two guys called Daniel that have written and directed this. And it's intoxicatingly strange that the fact that they've not only come up with such an unusual premise, but they've been able to run with it. So, yes, you do get Daniel Radcliffe as a corpse. He washes up on this desert island where a guy called Hank, played by Paul Dano from Little Miss Sunshine and There Will Be Blood, movies like that. He is stranded on this island. It's kind of hard to understand why. And then from there, he's rescued somehow. I won't go into graphic detail of how he's rescued by this corpse. But then they wash up somewhere else. And most of the movie is them wandering through a forest trying to get back to civilization. At some point, the corpse reanimates, comes back. It's hard to tell whether he's come back to life or not, but he talks. He talks. And a lot of the movie is a guy trying to explain real life to a corpse who seems to have amnesia about what his life was like before and is basically being reintroduced to stuff while they're in the forest. And like, wow.
Hey, so it's not so bizarre that you can't understand it at all. It does seem to have some plot you can follow.
Yeah, it is. So I had this film really built up for me. I read some reviews. I heard some things about it. They just said it's like so outlandish, you know, it's almost defies description. I think it does defy description. I haven't really seen a film like this. It's impressed me so much about how it was very well executed in its strangeness. But it's not so crazy, as you just said, not so bonkers that you can't follow it. And one of the downsides I thought was towards the end, it becomes quite conventional. It becomes like other movies. I thought, given what they'd set up with this incredible, everything from a corpse who passes a lot of wind, and the Swiss Army Man references the fact that this corpse can do all these kinds of amazing things to help Hank kind of get out of situations he's in. From those kind of like, just, I don't know where these guys come up with this, to the finale, which leaves it in a place that I found was a bit more expected than you would have expected from a film like Swiss Army Man. But go back to the bit where I am struggling to describe what Swiss Army Man is, and I quite like that. So obviously, describing Harry Potter as a corpse who comes back to life may not be your kettle of fish as a movie.
So if you're for the mainstream, you're looking for a nice night out with maybe a love story or something, probably not for you.
And here's that big word of warning, which should have, I hope, like already sparked by us talking about this, is if you're a fan of Harry Potter, and particularly for the youngsters out there, and parents think about, oh, should we let the kids go see Swiss Army Man because it's got Daniel Radcliffe in it? Probably not. Like, probably not, unless they're like up over 15, 16. And because it's not, there are some sexual references in this, and there's some bizarre bits where cross-dressing happens, where they're pretending to be on dates with each other, the corpse and the guy, which actually is more tender and sensitive than you would have expected from a corpse and a guy in a fake bus in a forest pretending to be a girl. But all of this should suggest to you, Mark, that caution should be exercised. Saying all of that, I thought Daniel Radcliffe did a fantastic job here as this corpse. He was excellent. If you want to see the best performance by a corpse on screen, Daniel Radcliffe, I'm not even trying to joke. I think for a guy who could just get washed away in the sands of cinema history because he was Harry Potter and could never go on to do anything else, like Mark Hamill in the Star Wars series as Luke Skywalker, I think Daniel Radcliffe isn't just deliberately picking different roles. I think he's picking good ones, at least on this occasion. And even though he tries to go off in different directions, this one, as bonkers as it is and not going to be for everyone, he does a great job. And so does Paul Dano. They really throw themselves into this.
And the Academy Award for a performance as a corpse goes to... Listen, what's with Swiss Army Man's focus upon death and getting rid of things which we don't want or can't use for?
Yeah, so one of the main things that goes through Swiss Army Man is a constant reference to purpose and meaning and what's it all about. And some of the greatest dialogue, I think, is between Hank and Manny, who's the corpse, just trying to explain life to somebody, and particularly the stuff that's very difficult or we just take for granted but we don't want to change. When you try to explain that to somebody else, you realize just how silly a lot of it can be. And in amongst all this, they're in a forest where they often find trash and things that have been discarded. And there's a lot of commentary throughout the film wafting through about consumption and the way we disregard things, particularly things we don't like or we find strange or unusual. And that's what how Hank feels about his life. And there's a big sense of loneliness wafting through this film as you watch Swiss Army Man. And these two guys, one a reanimated corpse and the other guy, pretty much on his deathbed or wanting to die, trying to find purpose. It reminded me of parts in the Bible like Psalm 139 that talks about how God knows every single person because he knit them together in the womb, and he knows them from that moment on and everything, what they're going to do. So watching a film like Swiss Army Man kind of ultimately can leave you with this baffling sense of not just weirdness, but what's it all about and what exactly is the message I'm being left with. Swiss Army Man, I'm not entirely sure what it's trying to tell me about purpose and meaning and loneliness and where to look for when you feel like you've been discarded. But go back to Psalm 139 and know that any situation in life, you are at least known by God, at least known by the God of the universe, creator of everything, which I think is an amazingly powerful, not just shift to your perspective, but should really hit deep in your heart as well.
Okay, well, Paul Dano and Daniel Radcliffe star in Swiss Army Man.
It opens... Weird!
opens its cinemas... Not funny at all. It opens its cinemas nationally from Thursday, July 14, and is rated M for coarse language, sexual references, and crude humour, which that basically means, in polite terms, lots of jokes about passing wind.
Yes, and still to come on the show, Mark, something completely different. Everything you need to know about Tarzan in 3 minutes and the top 5 commandments of spy movies.
Welcome back to The Big Picture. And look, just take a moment. Come in closer.
Okay.
Hi, Uncle Mark here. As Ben mentioned at the start of the show, we've got something quite special for you now. A new take on Tarzan has just opened the cinemas this week, and we're going to be discussing The Legend of Tarzan on next week's show. But to get us in a tree-swinging mood, we thought we'd ask Big Picture regular and reviewer from Insights Magazine, Russ Matthews, to bring us up to speed on The King of the Jungle. So for our Vault segment this week, Ben gave Russ 3 minutes, because we're pretty cheesy with time, to tell us all we needed to know about Tarzan.
Russ, what makes you a Tarzan expert?
You know, Tarzan has been a part of our family history. My grandmother used to tell this great story of my dad, who was so excited as a little boy to get to go see his first Tarzan movie. They go in, they're seated, my dad's sitting there waiting with anticipation, and then within the first few minutes of the on-screen comes this huge gorilla charging at the screen at the audience, and all of a sudden my grandmother looks over and my dad is gone. He's gone under the chair, out. She just managed to grab his ankle before he escaped away from the gorilla, but still, Tarzan still continues to be an endearing part of our family history.
Tarzan has been part of your formation in life, Russ, which definitely makes you an expert. Okay, so we have you here. I'm going to keep saying that, expert in Tarzan. And as such, we're giving you 3 minutes to tell us everything we need to know about Tarzan. And Russ, your time starts now.
Okay, now Tarzan, just so everyone knows, his name actually means white skin, but it comes from this made-up language called Mangani, because that was another thing that most people don't realize, is that he wasn't really raised by gorillas.
He wasn't raised by gorillas?
He wasn't raised by gorillas. Edgar Rice Burroughs made up kind of this fictitious kind of next level of evolution ape creatures called the Mangani.
And so, now, Russ, when you mention Edgar Rice Burroughs, you're talking about the author of the original Tarzan novels.
That's right. The original author of the books, he actually started back in 1912, wrote over 24 different books, but not only was it books, but it went on to be so many different films, television series, comic books, all these different things, that Tarzan has just been prolific throughout history, especially in pop culture.
Who do you think is the most famous Tarzan on screen?
I think if most people would think of Tarzan, they still go all the way back to the 30s and think of the Romanian swimmer named Johnny Weissmuller, who barely could speak English himself. I think that's kind of why they ended up going down the track of how they portrayed Tarzan in the films. But Johnny would probably be the most famous.
Russ, we've still got about a minute and a half. So he was super famous, but I heard that Edgar Rice Burroughs wasn't so happy with his performance.
He wasn't, because there's a lot of other things. If you go through and actually read some of the novels, you'd realize that, one, that Tarzan was actually exceptionally smart. He was multilingual.
He didn't just go, ah.
He did not. I was hoping you would do that. There we go. But he was also filthy rich. He was actually the Lord of Greystoke. There's all these different components to his history as far as his British history that most people don't see in the original films and isn't portrayed till much later in some of the other films.
So I presume then some of the depictions of Tarzan on screen, like the Johnny Weissmuller versions in the 30s, Edgar Rice Burroughs wasn't happy that some of the detail about Tarzan was left out?
That's correct. He actually didn't like the way they portrayed Tarzan. They kind of portray him as this kind of dumb ape man, but really he was actually quite brilliant, and there are so many other components to his character that he really liked. Also Jane, that he didn't like how they portrayed Jane on the original films, because she was actually from Baltimore, Maryland, of all places, interestingly enough, and she was blonde, which in the first few films they actually had her as a brunette.
Russ, we've got about 30 seconds to go. Tarzan's back on screen. A lot of people would question why Tarzan is still around. Why do you think Tarzan endures?
I think it kind of goes back to a quote from Edgar Rice Burroughs himself. It said, "Love is a strange master, and human nature is still stranger." In looking at that, I think that what really endures about him, about Tarzan, is that it strips back to his basic humanity, looking at the human nature component.
10 seconds.
Communication, also survival, but if anything, he's a mythical figure. The name alone has such a presence. Just saying Tarzan causes two things, either fear or hope.
Oh, 2 seconds over. Congratulations, Russ. I think that still qualifies you as a Tarzan expert. Ah!
Thanks so much.
I'm not going to do the noise again, but my goodness,
please.
I enjoyed doing the doing
one
it.
One more time.
No, I think several times in one segment is enough, Mark, for Tarzan impersonations. For more from Russ, which I know you want and I want and everybody else wants, insights.uca.org.au. Russ is the resident.
OurResidentAmerican.com.
Or just go to insights.uca.org.au and check out Russ's reviews every week. He's reviewed the biggest stuff that's around at the moment, Independence Day Resurgence, Ice Age Collision Course. He's going to have reviews up of Tarzan, Legend of Tarzan and Ghostbusters, all that kind of thing. Insights.uca.org.au. Well, Mark, the news that there was another Jason Bourne trailer out in the wilds of the internet set us a little bit a skitter, a flitter, a flutter. this week. And Jason Bourne, the film, the next Jason Bourne film, which is called Jason Bourne, is coming out at the end of the month.
Just in case you're wondering, what title will we go for now?
We're Bourne, I'll remain in Bourne's friend. Just go with his full name, Jason Bourne. Matt Damon's back in that role as the international spy, which redefines spy films for a generation. So that's coming back at the end of the month. Now, next week's show, we're going to talk about Our Kind of Traitor, which stars Ewan McGregor and Stellan Skarsgård, Damian Lewis from Homeland, based on the John le Carre novel, the guy who made Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. That's a spy film we're going to talk about on next week's show. So we were thinking about a lot of spy things this week, which led us to you coming up with the top five commandments for spy movies. So, Mark, should we take it away?
Please, number five.
Five.
My fifth commandment for all spy films, thou shalt have only the best.
Oh, basically, agreed. If you're going, my spying time, Mark, that's all I would accept.
If you're going to be an international man of mystery, then you've basically got to have the best of everything. And I'm particularly thinking in this moment of The Kingsman, the Secret Service 2014 film,
which is definitely not a movie that you're recommending that everybody rush out to see.
No, actually, it's a film I recommend you don't see.
Yes,
but it stars Colin Firth and Taron Egerton and Samuel L. Jackson. It's kind of a fun film, but my greatest moment in it, there are a lot I'd like to avoid, but there's my greatest moment in it is the fact that they're constantly, it's basically like a film for snobs. It's about the best sort of shoes, it's the best sort of dress, the best sort of, when they open a gentleman's cabinet and all of his high-powered weapons are laid out neatly in velvet sconces, that's telling me that these people really know quality.
That does sound like your life story.
It does.
Four.
The fourth commandment that all spy films should pay attention to, thou shalt not take no for an answer. Basically, if your controller says, don't do that, then it's your cue to do it. And basically, just keep doing it until you get a whole plot out of it. I'm thinking particularly of Spy Game. Did you see that 2001 Spy Game starring Robert Redford and Brad Pitt?
I did. Not many people have mentioned that movie since it came out, Mark.
It is a brilliant film. Look, if you
like
it,
it's brilliant. I liked it, I think.
Oh, no.
Why did it just
You've
tank?
Probably just forgotten how much you liked it.
Why? No, that's not the case. But why did it just drift away, do you think?
I don't know. Maybe it was because it was crowded by other stuff. But actually, given that Robert Redford has managed to do so many bad films, in the last sort of 10 years or so.
Yeah, he's really gone off the boil.
I know,
bit,
he has.
Watching Robert Redford.
This was kind of like one of those early good acting moments for Brad Pitt. And Robert Redford does a really well sort of round role as this sort of CIA agent called Nathan Muir, who's about to retire when he finds out.
Of course
out,
he is.
Yeah, when he finds
last
out that
day
his,
before retirement.
His protege, Tim Bishop, has actually been taken prisoner by the Chinese. Mm. And what is he going to do? And what he's told to do is nothing. And yet no is not what a spy answers well to. And so if you want a good no but yes film, I figure thou shalt take no for an answer is well encapsulated in Spy Game.
Three.
Here's the third commandment, possibly vying with the top two for the most important commandments of all spy films. Thou shalt not take technology in vain. Okay. Basically, you've just got to have gizmos that do things that we could all wish for.
Yeah, you do. And why else do you sign up to be a spy apart from getting a cool wardrobe
and a watch?
And a watch. But you want a funky watch, or you want a watch that can like build a house and then blow it up.
If your watch does not have a garret built into the side of it for choking people with, if your watch is one of those substandard.
And we're definitely not recommending that kids ask for that on their Christmas lists.
Honestly, I would. I want one. Actually, I wouldn't be worrying about the choking wire anymore, kids. That's way off the boil. Get one with a laser. Frankly,
laser.
If your watch doesn't have a laser, you're no one.
And what
on this
movie
block.
Out of the whole scheme of spy movies are you thinking of when you think of this?
When I'm thinking of technology, I'm thinking of Mission Impossible, 1996.
Yep.
I mean, it is just trick after trick after trick. American agents, under full suspicion of disloyalty, must discover and expose the real spies within their midst. It's great fun, but the most emphatic, perfect toy to play with is the rubber mask you can put on to look like Tom Cruise. Honestly, who wouldn't want that?
And don't lie to me, you've got some lying around the house.
I do.
Two.
My second commandment, okay, it pays particularly for the Bourne identity, thou shalt not look back. because it only causes trouble. Honestly, never look into your own backstory. It's trouble.
Although, Mark, I'm not trying to have a go at your list. It's been very good. But if they didn't, there'd be no movies.
Well, I'm just trying to say.
Because then he'd be like sunning himself on a beach somewhere. Yeah. Although his past always does come to hunt him down.
I'm just, Nandler, examine your own statement for a moment there. If he didn't look back, what he'd be doing, he'd have to suffer through lying on a beach somewhere with beautiful women and just enjoying cocktails.
But we don't want to suffer through that as an audience.
I'm not saying it's 2 hours of a film, but it's not a bad segment of life.
Yeah.
Okay. So every time you look back, there's trouble. And the Bourne Identity basically from 2002 onwards just tells you, yeah, you know, if you can't remember who you are and what happened yesterday, well, honestly, that's just my life. Okay, so why would you waste your time? Do I worry
Explain
about that?
So much about you.
Do I start running around the country knocking people on the head just because I can't remember what I did yesterday? When my wife says to me, what did you do today? And I struggle to remember. Do I take that as an excuse to run the car off the roads and chase people down in foreign countries? No, I don't. I just go, I don't know.
But it explains why I have to reintroduce myself every week to you.
My top commandment. Actually, I'm going to take this as a little more of a serious note. My top commandment for all spy films. Honor thy lord and master that your days may be long in the service. Basically, this is the theme behind every Bond film, okay? The idea, now Bond's something of a little, you know, risque, escapade sort of guy, okay? He always seems to be bucking the trend, but really what he's doing is saying, you know, the British Secret Service getting the job done, following the mission right to the very end is the most important thing. Nowhere is this more exemplified than in Skyfall 2012. Fantastic. You've got Sam Mendes directing it. You've got Daniel Craig, Javier Bardem, Naomi Harris. But what I like the most is the fact that Bond's loyalty to M is tested, okay, most of all.
Oh, that character played by Judi Dench.
Judi Dench. You know, her own past comes back to track her down and destroy her. And he is so determined to save her that he will see his career go up in smoke. He'll see his headquarters go up in smoke. He'll see his family home burnt to the ground and his favourite sports car trashed just for the sake of serving the person that he's been called to serve.
Why does this one strike you as number one?
Well, I might have drawn the line at destroying an Aston Martin for the sake of, you know, service. But I kind of like this as a Christian method, okay? When you think about this, this is what we've been called to do. You want to see your life as a Christian in somewhat more romantic terms. You're an agent. You sacrifice everything for the sake of the one you're serving and you might get an Aston Martin out of it. Well, actually, I'm not sure about the last bit, but the truth is...
I'm certain about the last bit. No, that's not...
The truth is the rewards are well and truly worth the sacrifice.
Welcome to the new MI6.
I'm your quartermaster.
You must be joking.
Also PPKS 9mm short. It's been coded to your palm print, so only you can fire it. Less of a random killing machine, more of a personal statement.
Q.
007.
I want to meet your employer.
How much do you know about fear?
All there is.
Well, not like this.
Mate, that's a top way to end off this show for this week. What are we going to do next week?
Oh, mate, Our Kind of Traitor, as you said, is we're going to be having a great look at that. It'll be great fun.
We also are going to swing in from the jet. That's right. I went for it.
You promised.
Okay. I didn't promise. And that's why I've got to stop now. We are going to be talking about The Legend of Tarzan, The Return of the King of the Jungle. Was it worth it that he came back? You'll find out.
You did promise. And of course, who you're going to call next week is Ghostbusters week. So we'll be talking all about that. And which time I will still be Mark Hadley.
I'll be Bambi Kekin.
Heaven help us.
The Big Picture is a Bible Society Australia production, sharing the light of God's word into every corner of your world.